Well, there's a beautiful song by Neil Sedaka, requested by one of our associate radio club members. I believe Neil Sedaka is of Polish extraction, if I recall. You used to be a big hit on Bandstand back in the 60s and 70s. Yeah, that goes out to the She-Wolves and anybody else that likes music. Yeah, right. White Aryan Resistance radio calling. White Aryan Resistance radio calling. This is White Aryan Resistance. Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker in North Central Indiana on a beautiful day. Oh, we got all kinds of sun, very little clouds, there's no rain today, and it's a wonderful Aryan day, and we give thanks to Mother Nature. Yeah, she takes care of us, and she's punishing much of the world because of their activities, both anti-environment and anti-white, and even punishing the whites that are anti-white. So karma, I guess. I guess there is such a thing. Okay. And as usual, every day we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And our big website is resist.com. And you might want to scribble that on the bathroom walls everywhere you go. I think people need to know about what's at resist.com. I noticed today I tried to make a comment on, I think it was Raw Story, and they say I'm banned from Raw Story from commenting. So I guess all animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. So we'll have to figure out another way of bugging the natives. Actually, that song by Neil Sedaka came out in 1974. According to my information, and now it's your information. Hello, Hank Greenberg, head of AIG. Remember that super ripoff that we gave $184 billion in bailout money? Yeah, he was on the Jon Stewart show, and Stewart really told him where to go. Listen to this.
Two. All right, you asked for it. Remember how we gift-wrapped $184 billion to insurance giant AIG to purchase that company's terrible mortgage bets so that their incompetence wouldn't become a global extinction event? Well, we just got the thank you note.
Former American International Group Chief Hank Greenberg is suing the architects of the government's response to the financial panic of 2008.
He claims the bailout violated shareholder rights.
Really? The largest shareholder of AIG, wasn't running it at the time, he was just the largest shareholder, a company that was hours away from bankruptcy, is suing the entity that, through sheer force of $184 billion, saved it. Or to put that another way, you gave me CPR, but would it kill you to take a breath mint? What, if any, is the legal basis for Hank Greenberg's claim?
Hank Greenberg and his investment firm Star International charging the government violated AIG's Fifth Amendment rights by charging it high interest rates on loans and by not compensating them properly for taking what became a 92% stake in the company.
You can't just take property without paying for it.
You can't? I think $184 billion is paying for it. Look, all right, so he believes $184 billion was not worth 92% of the company. It was unfairly low. Look, I don't want to be a dick. He may be right. Look, well, let's check the Blue Book value for a toxic asset-filled insurance company from 2008 on the day of the bailout. And if we put one over on you, Mr. Greenberg, if we treated you unfairly, you know what? That's our bad. And I'll be the first to apologize and write you a check for however many billions more you have been unfairly deprived of. So we're going to do the math. We gave $184.6 billion in exchange for 92% of AIG. So that means we are valuing the company around $200 billion. So now I'm a little nervous. You know what I mean? Because I'm thinking to myself, how much more than $200 billion was this company worth when the bailout began? Because that's how much we're going to owe this guy. So here we go. What was it worth? $15.4 billion. All right. So where we should have paid you 92% of $15.4 billion, we paid you $184 billion, or more than 1,000% of your company's market value. So I can see where your anger comes from. Explain to me again why you're in court.
Today, a lawyer for AIG's former chief said the terms of the bailout were extortion.
General rule. You're better extortionists. You're better kidnappers. Extract money from their victims rather than contribute. You know, this is, you never hear this. Hey, listen. If you ever want to see your precious little doggy again, you're going to take the $184 billion. And once you get the money, we will also give you your dog back. No cops! They always have to tell them not to have the cops come. If anything, the financial system extorted the taxpayers by screwing up so royally, the world would be on the brink of financial apocalypse without the bailouts. We were the ones without a choice. But you prefer to paint yourself as a valiant crusader against government tyranny.
What's the capitalist system like? What do we believe in? We believe in government has a right to take what they want, and you just shut up and eat your rice?
Well, I don't eat rice. Unless it's a truffle risotto. I like a nice risotto. Look, Hank Greenberg, just because you're a grumpy old man, let's not pretend this is up. Where you're some sad old widower being forced into a nursing home so they can take away your beloved balloon-filled house and turn it into a skyscraper. We all know what cartoon character you are. Listen, you got any other complaints, or can I just dismiss this case right now?
He is arguing that AIG got much harsher terms, about 14% interest rate on their loan. That was very different from banks like Citigroup or Morgan Stanley.
They were getting more generous terms. That in and of itself proves that the government went too far with AIG. At least that's the argument Hank Greenberg and his lawyers are making.
So your argument in court, your legal argument is... It's not fair. Following the precedent set by the famous Supreme Court case, I only got one cookie, V. My sister got two cookies. Come on. Sack up. Look, first of all, they shouldn't have gotten two cookies in the first place, but that doesn't mean your one cookie is nothing. Your loan terms were worse than the banks because you were insolvent. You should know how that works. You're an insurance company. Putting the screws to people in their lowest moments is what you do. So the essence of Greenberg's argument appears to be the banks got special treatment that AIG did not get, to which I say, welcome to the world, buddy. Because that's what we've been mad about. That they wouldn't lend to you at less than 14%? Yeah. We hate it too, only we call it having a credit card. And we don't sue over those rates because we can't. And you know what? You did still get special treatment. $184 billion for 92% of a company is special treatment. It just wasn't as special as you wanted it to be. The only reason you're suing the government, because they gave you a seat in first class, but not the elite platinum. Normal people don't even know about this part of the plane, but it's awesome because we have a jacuzzi up here section. I'll show you how the rest of the world would have been treated in AIG's shoes. It's in a little one-man show I've been working on entitled A Normal Person Asks for a Loan. I take you now to any town, USA. Where the local loan officer... I didn't think that was going to work. Rehearsal didn't work. I come back out of here, it works. Edison! All right. Oh, hello, Mr. Greenberg. Whoa, prescription. Okay. You've had... $84.6 billion for 90% of your company, which is only worth $15 billion. Hold on.
That's hilarious. That is really hilarious. I'll try to send it to you if I can. Well, here's our church report for the morning. Nearly a dozen Catholic nuns sexually abused at least 95 Mongol students at boarding and day schools run by the Ursuline Sisters of the Western Province, according to a lawsuit scheduled for trial later this year. The suit, which was filed in 2011 in Lewis and Clark County, Montana, lists 95 plaintiffs but includes placeholders for up to 105 potential victims, reported the Global Sisters report. The trial is scheduled to begin in December 1st, and the plaintiff's attorney will attempt to prove nuns who served from the 40s to the 70s at the St. Ignatius Mission School physically, sexually, and emotionally abused students from the Flathead Mongol Reservation. It affected a whole generation of Mongol American kids, said Vito de la Cruz, an attorney for the plaintiffs. About 5,000 U.S. priests and deacons have been accused of sexual abuse in cases dating to the 1950s. But only an estimated 83 other female religious figures have been accused of abuse, according to the online database. The database shows about 400 alleged victims of female religious figures, not including the Montana case. Only two of the accused women have been convicted of criminal charges, although dozens of them have been named in civil suits. So there you go. Those wild-ass nuns are out after the Mongols. Well, here's a story I know you're going to be interested in. A Wisconsin police officer transporting a couple to jail after a DUI stop was forced to pull over after the drunken duo began having sex in the back of his police cruiser. Heather Bastian, 29, and Travis Husnick, 33, were taken into custody after a Oconto County Sheriff's Department deputy observed their car drifting into the oncoming traffic on August the 3rd. Both Bastian, who was driving, and Husnick admitted they'd been drinking, and officers observed two open cans of Busch Light beer on the car's floorboard. Husnick, who police state, is a convicted felon and currently on probation, was handcuffed and placed in the back of the cruiser. He was later joined by Bastian, who was taken into custody for driving without a license and possession of a used syringe in her purse, which she reportedly told officers she used to shoot up meth. Wow. While transporting the couple to jail, Deputy Adam Zahn observed Travis lay onto Heather in the back seat. The officer stated that he saw Heather's legs go up and touching the ceiling and heard her begin to moan loudly. Zahn explained that he pulled over, opened the cruiser door, and saw Travis onto Heather having sexual intercourse. According to Zahn, Husnick's pants and underwear were around his ankles, and Bastin's shorts were hiked up, allowing Zahn to see both of her privates. Husnick was subsequently sentenced to 90 days in jail for lewd and lascivious conduct. Bastin pleaded guilty to drunk driving and disorderly conduct and was sentenced to 48 days in custody and fined $1,236. So shows you right now, boys and girls, if you're going to have sex, don't have it in the back seat of a police cruiser. But the question of the day is, they would have been handcuffed, as is always the practice. Now, you tell me, I guess it's possible, but it doesn't sound very probable to me that a girl handcuffed with her hands behind her and a guy handcuffed with his hands behind him, how they were having very much sex. And, yeah, you figure that one out. Well, I see those right-wing militias are at it again, baby. Yeah, Americans living along the Mexican border say militia patrols make them feel less safe, not more. They're not afraid of the cartels running all over the place with machine guns and bombs and you name it. Anyhow, quote, "We don't know who these people are," said Maria Cordero, an ACL community organizer who lives near the Rio Grande. I wonder if she's ever organized to keep illegal aliens out or keep cartel people out. Quote, "They're carrying high-powered rifles and weapons. It makes us feel less safe, not more safe, to have them here. We just hope they leave soon and leave us with the cartels and thousands of illegal wetback mestizos that are crossing the border, which we're perfectly comfortable with." Even some of the militia volunteers themselves have left the camps. I don't blame you. Right-wingers with guns, high-powered guns. I know enough about that to know that had a few cans of beer, which were set up during the summer to stem the tide of migrants flooding across the border in recent months over safety and legal concerns. Well, I'll tell you, the problem here is, you know, I was first out of the chute on these kind of programs, and I ran border watches for several years down there, and I might as well have been pissing in the wind because it made no change. The people who care don't care enough, and the people who don't care, they love it. So it's a waste of time. Anybody tells you, let's go down to the border and defend the border, you're going to end up in federal jail, man, not them. No, this is it's a fixed game. It's a fixed game. And there's no Taliban coming through that goddamn border. If there were, they'd have been blowing the shit out of things for years since 9/11. Are people so stupid not to recognize the fact that, and they're so guilt-ridden and scared that they're going to say, "Oh, man, they're coming. I saw one yesterday at Walmart, yeah." Well, anyhow, it's all bullshit, and don't get involved in it. Wait for the big numbers. Our time is coming, baby, but it's not here now. I think the best thing that the right-wing militias could be doing now is stopping all this fornicating in the back seat of the cop cars, man. We got a real problem here, and it's spreading fast. These were both white people, too. Remember Danny from down south? White people, wake up, white people. Danny Carver. Whatever happened to Danny Carver? I haven't heard from Danny Carver since he used to get on the Howard What's-His-Name show in New York City. Boy, here's another crazy-ass story about Ebola.
Inside
the plane, some guy made a joke about Ebola.
All right, here's the situation. I need everybody to sit down. Everybody sit down.
You too.
Yeah, the steward is telling everybody to sit down.
All right, I want everybody to sit. I need your attention, okay? It's going to look worse than it is, okay? I really want you to remember, it's a depth of my being. I've done this for 36 years. I think the man that has said this is an idiot. And I'll say that straight out. If you hear me, that's fine. I want you to keep your wits about you. We have people coming on that are, we've all been watching the news, so they look like they're in a bubble, you know, a little bubble machine. They're going to look like they're in a, you know, what is that?
The hazmat people are coming. Be calm, ladies and gentlemen. This is the captain.
Their job. This is all new territory for all of us. I'm trying.
No, you can't go to the bathroom.
And thank you for your patience. I know you all have your.
There's body fluid in there.
Video and all that stuff.
Well, put them on here so we can get off.
That's up to you and the video and the stuff. But stay out of their face and out of their way. And please only take the junk.
And I want to go see my mama. Oh my God, here come the hazmat team. From outer space. Wow. Well, I'll try to send you the video. Well, the Palins are on the warpath. Was to be our vice president. Yeah, authorities in Anchorage, Alaska said on Thursday that they would not press charges in connection with a local brawl last month involving relatives of the former Governor Sarah Palin, Republican, the Anchorage Dispatch News reported. Police also released their report of September 6th incident at a group birthday party organized by local homeowner Corey Klingenmeyer. The report corroborates prior accounts saying that Klingenmeyer was hosting a group birthday party when the Palins arrived. Kitty by the door shut, there's a man under the bed. Klingenmeyer told officers that Palin's daughter, Bristol Big Bertha Palin, hit him in the face several times after threatening to start a fight with another unidentified broad, saying she wanted to knock that bitch out. Three witnesses backed up Klingenmeyer's statement, saying she punched him five or six times. Klingenmeyer said he pushed Bristol Palin down after blocking another punch by grabbing her hand and arm. At that point, he said her brother Trick Palin and another man reportedly started trying to punch Klingenmeyer. The report stated that when the police arrived at the residence, a shirtless Trick Palin was being pushed into a limousine and had a bloody mouth, an injury under his left eye, and an injury on his left elbow. One officer described Trick Palin as an angry and intoxicated when he stepped out of the vehicle. Palin told police that the fight started when a friend of his, identified as Stephen Libedita, was punched from behind by an unidentified assailant. However, Libedita refused to speak to officers, saying he had tripped. Bristol Palin told police that she did not know who Klingenmeyer was, identifying him as the guy in the red shirt and accusing him of dragging her on the lawn by the legs and calling her a slut and a cunt. Both Sarah Palin and her husband Todd are listed as witnesses, but no interviews with them were listed in the report. However, one officer reported that Todd Palin confronted Klingenmeyer in his driveway while he was speaking to another witness and asked if he called Willow Palin a bitch. The officer had to separate the two men when Willow Palin entered the discussion and flipped Klingenmeyer the bird. The Palins left the scene afterwards in their big, long limousine. Wow, that's important news. I knew you wanted to hear it. Boy, oh boy, if you watch the news, you'll find out that this Ebola thing has really promoted racial separation all over the place. People are fearful of black people, and especially now that it's come to this country. So in an offhanded way, the Ebola is racially benefiting our particular position. Thank you, Mother Nature. You're doing good work. And along with that, they're now bringing forth all the statistics on the amount of people with AIDS are dying still at large rates, which brings up the not only the homosexual question, but other questions. So it all feeds into a more logical look at separation. Even if people don't want to separate, when things get really bad with Ebola and all this other kind of stuff, they're going to want to separate, and that's good. Thank you, Mother Nature. Well, it's Friday, boys and girls, and it's time to go back to school again, and let's go to work on this equilibrium manifesto that we started on yesterday. And even though it's somewhat of an intellectual creation, I think that most of us can understand most of it, even though I'm just a little farm boy out here. The Christian Occident is declining and dying, but the Faustian spirit will not die with it. It has to overcome the bonds that once tied it to the particular character of a culture that is not part of any longer. The transformation of the destructivity which our Western civilization has gotten under the influence of Judeo-Christianity unto a new wedding of creation and destruction to reactivate the evolutionary dynamics and the equilibrium of nature is the quest of the Faustian culture. The collective spirit, consisting of strong individuals, has to recognize and to accomplish its inmost perspectives and possibilities, which mean to overcome and to conquer any frontiers while always remaining in harmony with nature, to reach the ideal of the Overman, to reach the stars, the point where all and nothing, past, future, origin and fate unite, the giant star of wisdom. This is the Faustian impetus. I believe that Nietzsche Overman portrays this Faustian kind of man that is conquering itself in order to reach godlike status in harmony with nature and comical order and to build the foundation of the coming aeon. The next step of human evolution, or to be more precise, the return to the evolutionary principle after this age of involution, which has destroyed mankind's consciousness of nature and its own spiritual heritage, which lies buried in the collective unconscious and needs to be reawoken. Well, I mean, I think we have to move to reawaken superconsciousness. And I also believe that the Spengler analyzed the morphology of the human history and the inner destiny of cultures in order to provide the foundation for what can begin today, the conquering of these frontiers and the reawakening of the Western archetypes. Quote, Zarathustra, however, looked at the folk and wondered. Then he spoke. Man is a rope tied between the animal and the overman, a rope above an abyss, a dangerous to the other side, a dangerous on the way, a dangerous looking back, a dangerous shuddering and stopping. What is great in man? That is that he is a bridge and not an end. What can be beloved in man? That is that he is a translation and a decline. Friedrich Nietzsche also sprach Zarathustra. To survive this dangerous period of the old to the new aeon is it necessary to build the soil, the foundation on which a future pagan renaissance can arise out of the inner natural necessity and not from the desperate need to create something in order to satisfy the ego, to get an identity. Then there would exactly exist that danger Spengler wrote about in The Decline of the West. Quote, everywhere it is a mere play with myths one does not believe in, and the mere flavor to cults which one extends to fill the inner wasteland. The true belief still is in the ones in the atoms and the numbers, but it needs the educated hocus-pocus to be endured in the long run. Materialism is shallow and honest, the playing with religion shallow and dishonest. But with simply being possible, it already refers to a new and genuine searching that calmly becomes apparent in the civilized awakeness and finally distinctly comes to light. Materialism wouldn't be complete without the need of getting rid of the spiritual tension, letting oneself fall into mythic moods, pursuing something cultic in order to enjoy the charm of the irrational, that which is foreign to the nature, the peculiar and necessary, also the foolish for the sake of inner relief. That was from Oswald Spengler. I read the two volumes of Oswald Spengler probably about 25 years ago, maybe more. It's pretty tough reading, but you can do it. Today we can see how true this prophecy is. We must not allow to this mass of today's liars who just try to fill up the emptiness of the modern world with their unreal visions that are as annoying as the presence itself. And comparably, little is contributed to the achievements of our aims by the desperate maintenance of an enemy's image. I want to define our aim as the magical aim, because there is an esoteric depth beyond this philosophy and beyond these clear words that I have intentionally spoken that becomes immediately accessible to those who have preserved their ability to look beyond the surface of things. Another fundamental difference between the masses and the elite is to be found here. The masses only recognize superficial, obvious, material matters and is only able to realize connections between apparent distinct facts with the help of intellect, thus based on the principle of causality, while the elite units, intellect and institution, just like all other polarities as well. This unity of intellect and intuition results in the higher sense, something that could be called a sixth sense, regardless of the content such terms are usually used in. Distinct from any of today's occult hocus-pocus and describing a transcendental spiritual reality that is lost in the ashes of modernity, this unity I was talking about could very well be compared to the word Weltschussung, that's a tough word, that Evola used to describe something very comparable. Little children still feel the spiritual reality and live in harmony with it. There are many examples of children's occult abilities, of their higher sense that becomes buried and forgotten in the system of mass mentality, involution, and degeneration. Abilities are given to us by our mother nature, are destroyed in a machinery of slavery and materialism, and become unfathomable for the masses of humans who are ignoring a spiritual tradition all other cultures have been aware of. In this context, our civilization is the most primitive one that has ever existed, as it bereaves people of their natural abilities and thus their natural balance. It maims its own children. But there are individuals who are immune against the destructivity of the modern world and who have preserved this unity of intellect and intuition, and thus it is reserved to a few to find coherence and fathomable for the blind masses. What the herd recognizes as luck, accidents, wonders, or catastrophes, and so on, can be totally self-evident, regular, and even foreseeable. What I have described here is, in a very theoretical and not too concrete way, shall be an attempt to grasp with words the background of all happenings, the original cause of being, the mysteries of life, this original cause of things, the thing itself, so to say. The all is the spring of intuition and the spring of magical abilities, to refer to the pagan Renaissance as a magical aim again. Christian dualism, modern science, and the curse of materialism have locked the access to man to this cause, to the inmost principle of nature. They have bereaved European man of his spiritual powers and traditions. The access of the individual nature to the spring of intuition, to the collective soul of one's own folk, and folk can very well be seen in a purely spiritual sense here, and to the archetypical powers is locked for the masses who are spiritually degenerated beings. But for us, these gates are open wide, and we are able to use these energies that are hidden and unfathomable for most people. If such suppressed energies jerkily burst out in a spiritual higher spheres, concussions like those at the beginning of this century appear. What happens above does not happen below. Everything in the spiritual spheres has its secular, earthly, material correspondence. National Socialism, as an example, was the conscious and unconscious, and in the end certainly tragic, attempt to open these gates into the depths. The esoteric background of many earthly happenings is a fact that not just mere theory or craziness. I have already mentioned that there are people for whom the gates to inmost secrets and mysteries of nature are open wide, who have access to the archetypical powers and to the collective unconsciousness. But there's probably no European woman or man anymore nowadays who has preserved his or her natural abilities since birth. Mostly people's natural equilibrium is lost as soon as they are forced to enter the machinery of growing up with parents who themselves have lost every spirituality, of visiting school where knowledge is obtained in a purely secular, perverted, and tendentious way, steady influenced by the media. Christian moral irrigation from all things, mass manipulation, and the total denial of transcendental values. Only very few awakened from this fatal slumber, opened their eyes, and managed to get rid of this gruesome poison of modernity. Opening the gates that are closed is a difficult task, demands constant work on one's own personality, is a dangerous venture, and an act of magic one can only succeed in if one's mind is absolutely released from the moralist, dualistic dogmas of this age. Therefore, a new pagan Renaissance must not have the point of fighting against a desperately repeated image of an enemy. The point of such a Renaissance can only be the own creative energy. The mere repetition of phrases against something just feeds the energies of the enemy and strengthens the ideology of the enemy, establishes it even in spheres above and below, and is entirely counterproductive. Of course, this does not mean that every justified clearly and precisely the devastating consequences that especially the Christian dualism has on all aspects of life. Many people can be given a hint to find back to their own natural self, their will, and it can be made absolutely clear what really hides beyond such sick terms as good and evil. What has to be achieved through those in to overcome the repetitive usage of inverted Christian ideology. Our heritage and our future both lie far beyond good and evil, and in its unity of such polarities, also far above, a Luciferian flame that burns inside and outside and above. And Lucifer is not a perverted Christian symbol. It is the principle and light of wisdom. Otto Rahm considered himself a disciple of Lucifer. To return to the point, criticism for sake of criticism, of having something to be against, is absolutely worthless and doesn't contribute anything to a renaissance of paganism and transcendental spirituality. A confinement in a dualistic philosophy makes all kinds of magical work impossible, and therefore the reawakening of European spirit and return to transcendental values will be the task and the accomplishment for those whom the mentioned dualism is not existent on all levels. Only on this strong condition and foundation magical work can begin, and the founding of a spiritual renaissance is an act of magic. The ability to contribute actively or passively to this Faustian quest demands some hard work of the individual. There cannot exist any general instruction of how the single individual can return to his or her self and will, how they can flee from the claws of the modern world in order to feel the breath of nature, the Luciferian flame, the magical love of our Mother Earth, the streams of cosmical energies, and the power of equilibrium in and around oneself. Some do this like on a predestined path. Some manage it under the pressure of much work and privations. But most humans are forever lost, born just to vanish in the gray masses, blind, soulless, without spirit, nature, or consciousness. Much of what is written here may be self-evident for those who have already found back to their true self and higher will, who belong to the elite I was talking about, and whom I'd like to call my sisters and brothers. Although I know most of them at the present time just a little as they know me, but nevertheless I hope that this manifesto offers something that you can use for your philosophy and maybe awake some new thoughts and inspirations. But I also hope that I will reach new people who have the slumbering potential of finding their equilibrium and higher will, but who have not yet had the possibilities to open their eyes and senses for the smell of nature and a future that looks better than the present. Although it seems to be a pathetic ending, the Equilibrium Manifesto is meant to strengthen people's consciousness of their own heritage, culture, and their responsibility towards coming generations and towards their ancestors, who live for something that is nowadays lost, towards nature in all her beauty. Furthermore, it is meant to strengthen people's will to arise from the masses into the elite of those who have overcome the old aeon and whose spirit yearns for the coming age and who will finally make themselves immortal. And that's it. That's it. There was a poem at the end here dedicated to her spirit, Astra, revealed itself to me in the spring equinox of 1997. At a whispering lake, calm and dark waters, I sit bewitched in the spell of this first night in spring. My soul is filled with ancient fire. Austera, my love to thee arises from deep within. Of flowers you were born, wood scents sweet, but like a leaf has withered your delight. Austera, my goddess, when will we meet in this silent moon enshrouded night? An owl is screaming, red eyes, Iglim, will you be reborn from my moon strunk? Spring nights, Dream. And that's that. So I don't know who this guy was who wrote it, but he was from Germany. And he had Equilibrium Publishings under Friedenssyk 7, 32457 Porta Westphalia, Germany. So I don't know. You may want to look into this. And that's it from our reading for now, okay? Yeah. As I've told you many times, Obama has been set up as a straw man and a fall guy. Obviously, he thinks he's brighter than the brightest bulb, but in reality, he's been a he's been used and all along. And now it's even gotten to the point where people running for office in the upcoming election, Democrats, most of them, are putting a lot of distance between them and Obama. He's and the funny part about it is that they're getting extreme about it, to where you know, normally what they would say is, if they don't care for how Obama's done things, they would say, yeah, I voted for him, but I think he's gotten off the track and he's made some mistakes or something like that. But they're coming right out. They don't even want to talk about any association with Obama. So not only are the big boys and the money boys throwing Obama to the wolves, but with a 30% support rate, but the rank and file are now throwing him under the truck too. So it's going to be interesting to see how far down the tube he goes before it's over. Well, let's finish out the show with the readings from the good book, Might is Right, The Survival of the Fittest, by Ragnar Redbeard. To solemnly proclaim that all men are created equal is as stupid and unscientific as to assert that all dogs, cattle, apes, and trees are created equal. Are there not as many diverse varieties of dogs, cattle, apes, and trees as there are of men, planets, germs, stars, and suns? Where then is the intrinsic equality between an oak tree and a currant bush, between a meddlesome wolfhound and a yelping streetcar, between a buffalo bull and a hand-fed steer, between an untamable gorilla of the woods and an organic grinder's castrated monkey, between a cosmic-brained Bismarck and that famous Chrysling, quote, the good young man who died, unquote. Cannot a blooded bulldog whip a solid score of lean, half-starved street mongrels? Upon exactly the same principle, a small body of bold, self-reliant, brainy men are ever more than a match under any circumstance for, say, 10,000, nay, 10 million greasy mechanics. What is a mechanic anyhow but a specifically trained slave? And it would take the spirit of 1,000 American slaves to make that one live man. Theoretically, all these organisms are of the same species, but in the savage rush for bread, love, space, and life, there is much functional difference between them, as there is between a Royal Bengal tiger and a Mary's little lamb. The lamb was made to be eaten, and the tiger was made to eat it, and man was born to struggle as the sparks fly upwards. The necessities of environment make of each man the enemy or rival of other men, more especially those with whom he comes in direct personal conflict. Where, then, does equality come in? It does not come in at all. It is an idiotic myth. There must always be a substratum of victimized organisms. How could the tiger live if there were no lambs to devour? How could there be heroes if there were no slaves? How could there be great nations if they were if there were no contemptible ones. Compare the noble qualities inherent in some dogs with the obsequious virtues that distinguish 9 men out of 10. Now give to canine or homo equal liberty of action, equal opportunity, equal rights, and what will be the result? Must not the fiercest fighter fatten while the skeletons of lean weaklings project through their scrofulous hides? What power could dictate and enforce equality of opportunity? Socialism, Christianism, democratism, equalitarianism are really the whining yelpings of a base-bred mongrel multitudes. They howl aloud for state intervention, protection for suffering mankind. Regulating mill grinding, as it were, with the state to be their supreme idol, their god and master, their all in all, their great pangen drum. Poor, deluded, base-spirited weeds, truly the curse of God, is in the very marrow of their bones and every pump stroke of their dying heart. The man who prays to be protected by politicians, guarded by armed janissaries, saved by idolatrous priests, and redeemed by state regimentation is indeed a miserable sinner, a vile, despicable, unmanly wretch. No paternalistic government mechanism, however theoretically perfect, can ever keep the base-born and the well-born, the thoroughbreds and the hybrids in a state of perpetual equilibrium. You might as well try to bind down an earthquake with a hoop iron, or to rule the strong with the be it enacted, were invented only to frighten captives. What power on earth can permanently keep the Negro on a parity with the Anglo-Saxon? The strong must have their way in spite of all puritanic proscribings, all mock moralisms, all degraded legalisms, all constitutional coveting. Neither the machinery nor the raw material of equality has ever existed, only the dream, the idea of it, equality, equality. In that one word is summed up the accumulated dementia of 2,000 years. The thought of it was born in the brain of an inferior organism, and the brains of an inferior organism nourishes it still. How can beings who for ages have been born and bred to toil and subjectivity ever accomplish the feelings of those who are born free and of a valorous descent, of those who understand the cosmic law that might is master? You cannot muzzle a tempest with a cobweb, bridle a volcano with a shoestring, bottle up a cyclone in a powder horn, or catch a tidal wave with boat hook. Neither can you put a bit between the teeth of the strong. They will see you in shoal first. No artificial plan of society, no pious incantations, however sincere and well-intentioned, can ever prevent the pot that is of iron from smashing and sinking the pot that is of clay. And why should it? If social equilibrium had been feasible, it would have been established ages and ages ago. It never has been established, and it never will. What then is the good of eternal dreaming, theorizing, and constructing phantom castles in the air, cities of God, and gardens of delight upon the foundations of deliberate university? Let us be men, whole men, not clamorous, tearful little children demanding infantile sugar plums. Let us face the fierce and challenging facts of existence as boldly as our forefathers did before Christly comfort and consolation was introduced to unman them, not like crouching, cringing, terrorized Oriental pariahs. Let us not be lured to wholesale annihilation by sonorous Asiatic evangelisms that have proved themselves worthless and unsuitable to our temperament, our climate, and our breed. Let us be sensible, brave, practical, and as Virchow somewhat trenchantly comments, quote, accept things as they really are, not as we choose to imagine them, unquote, or rather as they have been imagined by dotard philosophers, draft poets, and castrated clerics. And that's it for today, boys and girls. I think you get the message. I hope you get the message. Let's not worry about the bullshit, the little stuff. We're surrounded by all kinds of run-for-your-life stories, stories that are meant to just keep us tied down all day long, thinking about it all night long, thinking about it. Let's concentrate on important long-range things, because this mess is coming down. And there's nothing you could do to stop it. There's nothing you could do to start it. It's your job to think about the future and what the possibilities are in the future. That's it for today, 14-5. Tomorrow will be Sling Blade to give you some operating ideas. You never know what he's going to come up with. We've got a lot of his shows setting here. So we'll see you tomorrow on Saturn's Day with Sling Blade, 14-5. And shut up. Almost nobody that surrounds you in your daily life or around your town is worthy to talk too much about these things that have to be done or have to happen. They don't want to listen. You just infuriate them. And like the fellow I confronted the other night about taking the passports away from Jews who go to fight for the IDF, but that's bad. But it's good to take the passports away from Islamists that shouldn't be here in the first place. But if they go to fight for ISIS, it's all crap. It's all nothing, and it's a waste of time to talk to the general public about it.
Here's one more item for you, the last in our civics book, rights. Boy, everyone in this country is always running around yammering about their fucking rights. I have a right. You have no right. We have a right. They don't have a right. Folks, I hate to spoil your fun, but there's no such thing as rights, okay? They're imaginary. We made them up, like the boogeyman. The three little pigs, Pinocchio, Mother Goose, shit like that. Rights are an idea. They're just imaginary. They're a cute idea. Cute. But that's all. Cute and fictional. But if you think you do have rights, let me ask you this. Where do they come from? People say, well, they come from God. They're God-given rights. Oh, fuck. Here we go again. Here we go again. The God excuse. The last refuge of a man with no answers and no argument. It came from God. Anything we can't describe must have come from God. Personally, folks, I believe that if your rights came from God, he would have given you the right to some food every day, and he would have given you the right to a roof over your head. God would have been looking out for you. God would have been looking out for you. You know that? He wouldn't have been worried about making sure you have a gun so you get drunk on Sunday night and kill your girlfriend's parents. But let's say it's true. Let's say God gave us these rights. Why would he give us a certain number of rights? The Bill of Rights of this country has 10 stipulations, okay? 10 rights. And apparently God was doing sloppy work that week because we've had to amend the Bill of Rights an additional 17 times. So God forgot a couple of things, like slavery. Just fucking slipped his mind. But let's say God gave us the original 10. He gave the British 13. The British Bill of Rights has 13 stipulations. The Germans have 29. The Belgians have 25. The Swedish have only 6. And some people in the world have no rights at all. What kind of a fucking goddamn God-given deal is that? No rights at all? Why would God give different people in different countries different numbers of different rights? Boredom? Amusement? Bad arithmetic? Do we find out at long last, after all this time, that God is weak in math skills? Doesn't sound like divine planning to me. Sounds more like human planning. Sounds more like one group trying to control another group. In other words, business as usual in America. Now, if you think you do have rights, one last assignment for you. Next time you're at the computer, get on the internet, go to Wikipedia. When you get to Wikipedia, in the search field for Wikipedia, I want you to type in Japanese Americans 1942, and you'll find out all about your precious fucking rights, okay? All right. You know about it. You know about it. Yeah. In 1942, there were 110,000 Japanese American citizens in good standing, law-abiding people who were thrown into internment camps simply because their parents were born in the wrong country. That's all they did wrong. They had no right to a lawyer, no right to a fair trial, no right to a jury of their peers, no right to due process of any kind. The only right they had, right this way, into the internment camps. Just when these American citizens needed their rights the most, their government took them away. And rights aren't rights if someone can take them away. They're privileges. That's all we've ever had in this country is a bill of temporary privileges. And if you read the news even badly, you know that every year the list gets shorter and shorter and shorter. You see how similar? Bearing on the Bible. You understand that shit? They tell you to raise your right hand, place your left hand on the Bible. Does this stuff really matter? Which hand? Does God really give a fuck about details like this? Suppose you put your right hand in the Bible, you raise your left hand. Would that count? Or would God say, sorry, wrong hand, try again? And why does one hand have to be raised? What is the magic in this gesture? This seems like some sort of a primitive voodoo mojo shtick. Why not put your left hand on the Bible, let your right hand hang down by your side? It's more natural. Or put it in your pocket. Remember what your mother used to say? Don't put your hands in your pockets. Does she know something we don't know? Is this hand shit really important? Well, let's get back to the Bible, America's favorite national theatrical prop. Suppose the Bible they hand you to swear on is upside down. Or backward. Or both. And you swear to tell the truth on an upside-down, backward Bible. Would that count? Suppose the Bible they hand you is an old Bible and half the pages are missing. Suppose all they have is a Chinese Bible in an American court. Or a Braille Bible and you're not blind. Suppose they hand you an upside-down, backward Chinese Braille Bible with half the pages missing. At what point does all of this stuff just break down and become just a lot of stupid shit that somebody made up? They fucking made it up, folks. It's make-believe. It's make-believe. Now, all right. Okay. Let's leave the Bible aside. We'll get back to the science fiction reading later. The more important question is, what is the big deal about swearing to God in the first place? Why does swearing to God mean you're going to tell the truth? Wouldn't affect me. If they said to me, you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God, I'd say, yeah. I'll tell you about as much truth as the people who wrote that fucking Bible. How do you like that? Huh? Huh? Swearing on the Bible doesn't mean anything. It's kid. Swearing to God is kid stuff. Did you ever, remember when you were a kid, if you told another kid something he didn't quite believe, he'd say, you swear to God? I would always say, yeah, I swear to God, even if I was lying. Why not? What's going to happen if I lie? Nothing. Nothing happens if you lie, unless you get caught, and that's a whole different story. Sometimes a kid would think he was being slick with me, and he'd say, you swear on your mother's grave? I say, yeah. Why not? First of all, my mother was alive. She didn't even have a grave. Second of all, even if she was dead, what's she going to do? Rise from the grave and come and haunt me? Come and haunt me? All because I told a lie to an 8-year-old? Get fucking real, will you? Sometimes I would say, I swear on my mother's tits. Kids are impressed with things like that. I mean, I don't care about my mother's tits either. I don't care if they fell off. Fuck her. Not my problem. They're your tits, Ma. You keep an eye on them. Swearing to God doesn't mean anything. Swearing on the Bible doesn't mean anything. You know why? Because Bible or no Bible, God or no God, if it suits their purposes, people are going to lie in court. The police do it all the time. All the time. Yes, they do. It's part of their job to protect, to serve, and to commit perjury whenever it supports the state's case. Swearing on the Bible is just one more way of controlling people and keeping them in line. And it's one of these superstitious things that holds us back as a species. Here's a